Hello and thank you for joining for another episode of Turkey Book Talk. I'm William Armstrong here in Istanbul. In this podcast we hear from authors of newly released books on Turkey and the region. Give our Facebook page a like and or follow the Twitter account at Turkey Book Talk. There are show notes and links at armstrongwilliam.wordpress.com and please do rate or review the podcast wherever you listen to it, which really does help more people find it. Remember, if you haven't already, do consider signing up to become a Turkey Book Talk member for exclusive extras and to help us keep going. Joining our growing list of signed up members gets you transcripts in both English and Turkish of every interview published on Turkey Book Talk via email as soon as the episode is published. You also get transcripts of the entire Turkey Book Talk archive, which so far amounts to well over 80 conversations and which includes a number of extra interviews not previously published on the podcast. Members also get access to an exclusive discount deal, a whopping 35% off the cover price of books published in IB Taurus's extensive Turkey and Ottoman history category. IB Taurus, which is now part of Bloomsbury, has well over 400 books in its Turkey and Ottoman history series, including both academic and general interest titles. Turkey Book Talk members receive a special code for a 35% discount on books in that series, including physical books, pre-orders, and ebooks. Last but not least, members also receive an archive of 231 book reviews written by myself, covering various categories including Turkish and international fiction and poetry, history, politics, journalism, the Middle East and Europe. That archive was written over the course of 5 years and was previously available online, but nowadays a Turkey Book Talk membership is the only way to access it. To become a member, all you have to do is pledge a minimum of $3 per episode via Turkey Book Talk's official Patreon account. New episodes go out every week, so the monthly membership price is no more than $6. Of course, if you're feeling particularly generous and want to pledge more, then you'll certainly be more than welcome. But so long as you pledge $3 or above per episode, membership is entirely at your own discretion. Members only get charged when a new episode is published, so there are no prior commitments or strings attached. You'll be free to sign off whenever you want. But now let's get on with our latest episode, in which we welcome Şevket Pamuk. He's a professor of economics and economic history at Istanbul's Boğaziçi University and the author of Uneven Centuries, Economic Development of Turkey Since 1820, which is published by Princeton University Press. The book examines institutions and economic development in the Ottoman Empire and Republic of Turkey over the past two centuries, looking at both ruptures and continuities. Through close inspection of the available data since 1820, which was elsewhere the era of the Industrial Revolution, the book makes the case that Turkey's long-term economic performance has been neither much better nor much worse than world and developing country averages over that time. I ask Şevket Pamuk to elaborate on that a little later, but I started by asking him to explain why the book is titled Uneven Centuries.
Well, Uneven addresses, hopes to address a number of things. Uneven because the world economy as a whole has become more uneven in the last two centuries, and Turkey's place in this world economy, in the world today, is very much the result of what has happened over the last two centuries. Turkey's economy has fluctuated, has had good times, bad times, so uneven in that sense. And finally, I would say it, Turkey has experienced a lot of inequality between the rich and the poor, between different regions, rural areas, urban areas. So the term uneven tries to capture all of those things about Turkey's experience with economic development in the last two centuries.
And one of the themes that runs throughout the book is this idea that Turkey's long-term economic performance has really been close to the both the world and developing country averages, really. So, and you say, you write that, quote, its long-term growth rates have been higher than those of Latin America, Africa, and the Middle East, but have lagged well behind those of more successful and more populous countries in East, Southeast, and South Asia, including India and China. And it's striking in a sense how average Turkey is in that sense. It's a complicated question, I suppose, but why has that been the case? What is it that's prevented Turkey from performing above average as a late developing country, in contrast to somewhere like South Korea, for example?
there are things about the world economy and the rules of the global economy and so on, and they have an impact, certainly, on how well Turkey did. But it's also true that why is Turkey not above average? I would point to Turkey's politics. I would point to recurring periods of political instability, even disorder. And Turkey's political regime has not been able to handle these periods well.
And why is that? I mean, it's a very difficult question, I suppose, but what is behind that instability? Because it's a persistent theme, you know, that goes across decades. And in the book, you have a crack at answering that. How would you answer that question?
I think in economic history, we don't know really the precise answer. We are trying hard to pin this down. But one of the things I have noticed, my study of Turkey's history over the last two centuries, is that there are tensions between different groups in Turkey. There have been tensions between different groups in different periods, between the secularist reformists and the more conservative elites in the 19th century, between Muslims and non-Muslims in the 19th century. In the 20th century, again, the tensions between secularists and the conservatives have continued. There are also tensions between the Turks and the Kurds. Turkey's politics have handled these tensions well at times and not so well at times. Turkey has experienced a series of military coups since the end of World War II. And more recently, we've had serious difficulties with Turkey's democracy. All of those things have affected Turkey's economic performance negatively. Turkey has done better than the average for developing countries. So obviously, Turkey is not done poorly. So in fact, I would say that what we see in Turkey is common to many other developing countries. It's those very rather unusual cases, very few cases where developing countries have done exceptionally well. But many other developing countries experience these kinds of political, social tensions, recurring problems. And in that sense, Turkey belongs to this larger set of developing countries where politics matter and politics have prevented the economy from doing better over the longer term.
Now, you divide, I mean, it's a really sweeping book from 1820, so it's almost 200 years of economic history. And you divide that sweep of time into kind of four main periods. And the first one, of course, was the 19th century, really leading right up to the collapse of the Ottoman Empire and the First World War. And then the early Republican period leading up to the 1950s, and then the 1950s leading to 1980 coup, and from then the 1980 coup to today. And these are four periods that have distinct characteristics, let's say. And one of the things that you argue in the book is that each of the four historical periods that you examine, actually governments in Turkey pursued economic policies that were very consistent, actually, with the most common strategy of economic development globally at that time. So in the 19th century, for example, it was the first era of globalization, so you had quite an open economic system integrating with the European powers. And then the early Republican period, and particularly after the Great Depression, and in the 1930s, you had the much more kind of protectionist era in line with other economies in the world. And then from 1950, which was the start of the multi-party period, it was Turkey's integration into the Western camp in the Cold War, but you also had an import substitution program that it wasn't particular to Turkey in any sense. And then after 1980, it was the era really of neoliberalism, let's say, and that again was consistent with a trend that was that you can trace in many other countries. Just talk about that and how Turkey is kind of almost not distinct from many other tendencies that we can observe elsewhere.
Yes, you've summarized this periodization quite well. Turkey happens to be at the crossroads between two continents, very close to Europe. So Turkey's governments, Turkey's economy have been influenced by the main trends in the world economy. And sooner or later, Turkey's governments have had to adjust, let's say, to the prevailing winds in each period. In the 19th century, century, you had the European governments pushing for free trade around the world, and sooner than later, the Ottoman government fell in line. The one period where Turkey's governments had greater autonomy than the other periods is actually the interwar period, where these global rules of the world economy disintegrated. So the new republic, the government in Ankara, had more autonomy during this period to pursue more independent policies, and that allowed for an early spurt of industrialization. But the period after World War II, and most recently since 1980, Turkey has again followed the general pattern. Of course, the frequent political tensions, economic fluctuations, economic instabilities have led to governments asking for help. For example, IMF coming in and suggesting, pressing governments in Turkey to pursue a certain economic pattern of development. And these have also been influential in deciding ultimately the economic model in each period.
Now, the book, as we say, gives a continuous history from 19th century to the 20th and the 21st, from the Ottoman era to the Republican period. And in that sense, it's in line, really, with a lot of contemporary scholarship that emphasizes the continuity between the Ottoman and the Republican eras rather than the rupture. So I just wonder, economically, what would you say are some of the key standout continuities, really, that we can trace from the Ottoman era to the Republic of Turkey?
Well, let me just say a couple of things about the political. Turkey, if you look at the big picture, Turkey has not experienced colonial rule, let's say, unlike many other developing countries over the last two centuries. So it's been Turkey's elites, one way or another, making decisions, lots of decisions about reforms, economic policies, subject to some of the global rules, global constraints we already talked about. And then I think one big issue pattern that I see over the last two centuries is the pace at which Turkey has been able to adopt new technology. All this during the last two centuries, economic growth, increases in incomes have been the one consistent theme across the world. Incomes have been rising in many countries, most countries, but at very different pace. Turkey has had, again, a mixed experience with the adoption of technology, industrialization, has not had a very strong record and has not had a very poor record with industrialization, adoption of new technology, developing new skills, and so on. There are a number of reasons. Turkey's education system has not been strong. Turkey has not been able to educate its population very well and spread its schooling system. Also, Turkey's investment rates have not been very high, have been close to average over the last two centuries. As a result, Turkey has been specializing over the last two centuries, not so much in high-tech, high innovation sectors, but middle-tech, low-tech sectors, and has been experiencing close to average productivity growth. I would say this is a pattern that has been consistent more or less over these four periods.
Now, one of the areas, of course, where there was a big rupture was the removal, essentially, of the Christian minorities. So in the Ottoman era, it was often Greeks and Armenians based in metropolitan centres who held the reins of economic activity and development. But as we know, that wasn't the case in the Republic, when the population had become overwhelmingly Muslim and Turkish. And one of the key aims of the early Republic was essentially to create a Muslim bourgeoisie, essentially to replace the old Christian majority bourgeoisie. Just talk about that. What did that involve, and what were the consequences really of that process?
Yes, I would say the prevailing ideology during this shift from the Ottoman era to the Republic was nationalism, political nationalism and economic nationalism. I refer to the fact that over the two centuries, Turkey's political system has not handled these tensions very well. In the 19th century, along with globalization, opening to trade, investment, inequalities between Muslims and and non-Muslims grew, and this combined with nationalism led to massacres of some of the non-Muslims and also departures of the other non-Muslims and exchanges of population. And of course, these have had adverse long-term consequences. The economy, certainly the economic development has suffered as a result, certainly in the first half of the 20th century.
You also write that, religion has long been offered as a primary cause of the differences in economic outcomes between Western Europe and the rest of the world. Since the early modern era, a long line of European authors have focused on Islam as the key to societies in the Middle East and the primary cause of economic stagnation in the region. But throughout the book, you push back on this idea that Islam or religion is somehow the key determining factor in Turkey's development path. Just flesh out the argument. Why, in your view, is the importance of Islam often overestimated when people talk about the development or underdevelopment of Turkey?
Well, if you look at the Ottoman era, also more recent period, 19th, 20th century, when there was demand coming from different parts of society for certain changes, for institutional changes and so on, when there is demand, Ottoman society and all then in the 19th century and 20th century, Turkish society have been flexible enough to achieve those institutional changes. So I don't see Islam being a constraint. I don't see Islam being the obstacle to economic development. Rather, if we're going to look for the reasons why Turkey's economic development has not been better than average or a little above average, I think we should look at other areas, the role of the state, the role of these political tensions, why Turkish society has not been able to handle these tensions, the recurring tensions and so on, but not, certainly not Islam per se.
And you also make the point that Islamic law was often, in fact, very flexible in the Ottoman Empire. So when the elites or some interest group needed to change it or reform it based on some new development, they always found a way, or often found a way at least. So in that sense, arguably, Islam wasn't this huge millstone hanging around the neck of society and the economy. It was something quite flexible and it could be adapted.
That's right. That was the case in the Ottoman era, and that's the case today. Well, you can say politicians try to use Islam for their own ends. But again, that's politicians trying to make use of Islam, but not Islam per se. It's not, the obstacle has not been Islam. And I think we should look again at the role of the state and the tensions between different groups, the politics rather than religion.
And that politics has often been very full of incident, really, very tempestuous, as you describe in the book. These cleavages are very persistent and have often metamorphosized and changed shape over time and taken different forms. Just bringing the story forward a bit, I mean, you make the point that since 1980, we've been living in what is commonly referred really to as the neoliberal era, where the powers of the state to intervene in the economy have been radically cut back. But actually, even though the role of government interventionism may have declined in theory, you argue, I'm quoting here, government support for the private sector continued, and the government remained central to deciding the winners of the economy in the new era. Privatization auctions and winning infrastructure and public procurement contracts from the government remained key mechanisms. And indeed, of course, it's impossible really to imagine the AKP without its control of these levers of economic power. But that it isn't just restricted to the current era. You know, it really goes back decades. Just talk a bit about this aspect, particularly since 1980, the central importance of the state in the economy that remains very strong, even in what is commonly referred to as the neoliberal era.
My concern in this book is to explain why Turkey has not done better than average. Of course, I could have emphasized the other half. I could have said Turkey's done about average, a little above average, and that's a positive thing. So when I say politics have affected Turkey's economic development adversely, I am again trying to find out why Turkey hasn't done better than a little above average. And of course, in each of the periods, we've already covered the four periods, Turkey adopts a certain economic model, certain rules, institutions, but in each of these periods, those institutions, the global institutions, the economic policies interact with society, politics, and ultimately the end result in each of these periods, and certainly in the last period, is different from what was originally envisaged. In 1980, Turkey began to adopt these neoliberal policies wholesale, but already in the 1990s, we see that economic policies began to change. There was a second wave after the crisis in 2001. Turkish governments in 2001 adopted a new wave of institutions, economic policies, and the AKP government embraced them in the early years. But in the end, those institutions from 2001 onwards were modified by the AKP government. Over time, AKP's politics control meant that they would change quite a lot of the original policies. If you look at Turkey's relation with the world economy since 1980 or since 2001, all those rules about trade liberalization, financial globalization, they have remained intact. But lots of rules that concern the domestic workings of the economy, which Turkey adopted with the 2001 program, they have been changed. AKP's vision about the domestic economy is very different today, and Turkey's domestic economy functions very differently today than the initial blueprint in 2001. In the early years, the AKP was politically not so powerful and was content to live with the 2001 program. But as AKP began to consolidate its power, a new political regime emerged as the number one priority for AKP governments, and economic development, creating a more competitive, more productive economy, ceased to be an important role for AKP. AKP is trying to change the political system over the last 10 years. So that has been the main goal. As a result, economic development has suffered, creating, a competitive industrial sector, promoting exports has not really been the leading priorities, rather creating a new layer of businessmen that will align themselves with the government has been the key goal in economic policy. So when politics trumped economic goals, we ended up with a much more vulnerable, much more fragile economy over the last decade.
And what about today? I mean, we're in this era where, you know, the centralized state under the current government is more important than ever, really. And just recently, we've, of course, had these state-directed sales of fruit and veg. It's quite a remarkable turnaround. And, of course, Turkey's currently in a bit of economic difficulty. I mean, how do you, in the broad sense, see things developing from here in an economic sense?
Well, because politics have dominated the economy over the last decade, and because of the recent political conflicts and so on, my reading is that the Turkey's private sector is very uneasy. This is supposed to be a market economy, and the private sector is supposed to play an important role. But in the Turkish economy over the last decade, private investment outside of construction sector has declined and remains low. And I think it's due to diminished confidence in the economy by the private sector. So Turkey is facing a period of low private investment, which brings about a long period of low growth, low productivity growth, if not stagnation. And that's, I think, the main difficulty. This current recession may last a while, but over the long term, Turkey will not be able to easily grow out of this recession because of this underlying confidence problem.
But how different is it in that sense from previous eras? Because in a way, like, private business interests have always been wrapped up with political interests, particularly in Turkey. And, you know, in previous eras, in a way, those private interests benefited from those close relationships. And in a way, we're seeing that among, at least in some companies in Turkey today, you know, they're almost relying on the government to bail them out, or, you know, you're seeing various sweeteners being provided. And, you know, the government, in a sense, is an essential pillar of them surviving, in a way, maybe not thriving, but at least surviving. I mean, is that something that is new to the current era, or is it something that we can trace back going back decades?
I think we can see similar kinds of behavior in the earlier era, but I would say that over the last decade, the degree to which these things have happened has increased, and you can't easily find this degree of interventionism and expropriations, economic policy reversals, you cannot easily find in the earlier periods. And in some ways, economic policy has been dominated by the political need to move the economy to a new political regime. And in that sense, I think this period, the last decade, has been different from the earlier periods. So that has resulted in, I think, a greater loss of confidence by the private sector.
And just to wrap up, going back to the initial point that we were talking about earlier, you know, this idea that the performance of Turkey is being average for a developing country.
A little above average.
Yeah.
But you're right. Yeah.
So we can see this fairly standard picture for a developing country for the past two centuries. And it's actually also something similar on a smaller scale for the period of the current government. So really, the last few years have really seen accelerated growth in developing economies. It's been the age of developing countries, really. And while Turkey has also registered fast growth rates, those growth rates have not really been extraordinary. You know, they've actually been pretty close to the average among developing countries. I just wonder, you know, if we could frame that in the context of this broader pattern that you can see over the last 200 years of Turkey being somewhere close to the average.
Well, I think the word uneven in the title of my book also refers to this, that if you look at Turkey's history over the long term, there have been periods of strong economic growth, but these have then been followed by the recurrence of the political problems, tensions, politics dominating the economy. And in that sense, the AKP period is very similar to many others in the earlier periods. AKP rule began with a period of economic recovery, and then high rates of economic growth. But then politics took over. And as all the things that we discussed happened, Turkey's economic growth and economic development has declined. And we are facing today a period of possibly prolonged stagnation or low growth. And I expect that it will not be easy in the years ahead to create employment, to prevent the unemployment rate from going up. So in a way, in the second half of the AKP era, Turkey has regressed to its long-term averages.
That was Şevket Pamuk. Many thanks to him. Remember to consider signing up as a Turkey Book Talk member if you enjoy the podcast and want to help support it. Membership gets you access to that special 35% discount on Turkey and Ottoman history books published by IB Torres and Bloomsbury. Transcripts in English and Turkish of every interview as it's published. Transcripts of the entire Turkey Book Talk archive of over 80 conversations so far. And access to an archive of 231 book reviews written by me, covering Turkish history, politics, literature, and various other things. To become a member and get all that, just pledge a minimum of $3 per episode via Turkey Book Talk's official Patreon account. Also, do please rate or review Turkey Book Talk on iTunes or whatever podcast platform you use. Follow via Twitter or like the Facebook page to stay fully updated with new episodes. And you can send any recommendations, feedback, or abuse to williamjohnarmstrong@gmail.com. But until the next episode of Turkey Book Talk in a couple of weeks, thank you very much for listening.